Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Thank you.
Good.
We're going to solve the problems as usual.
That's our daily job.
Every once in a while, I'll read the news, and they'll say something. I say, you know, isn't that what we said yesterday or this? And you think, did we have anything to do with it? And then I get back down to earth. Probably not. But there's
best.
A couple people. We have a few people out there listening right now. And those are the important people because they're interested in, you know, analyzing what's going on, trying to figure out what and why. Usually in the media, there's always a scheme involved.
Yeah.
And we want to start off with a scheme. When we get into our first area, we want to talk about the Delta variant and natural immunity. I think I have a son that got involved in that discussion
a little bit.
And the Fauci argument. But before we do this, there's been a report out that is interesting because we've just heard a story about how we were going to evacuate Afghanistan forever. And yes, I think some troops did leave, and we complimented the president for this. But of course, there are strings attached. And the strings are attached from the military-industrial complex to the U.S. Congress to any administration that we have. So don't move too quickly. And one thing, when they move back and pretend they are less militant, we never see a cut in the military budget.
Yeah.
Usually it's, oh, this is a little bit more confusion. We're going to move troops around. Send us a couple extra $1 billion this year. So it doesn't have to do with the total philosophy, which we're interested in. So when we saw this report this morning, it perked us up a little bit. And this one says that there may be a move on by the administration to leave Iraq. And again?
I think
we've been trying to leave there for a long time. Of course, maybe they want to see if they can break the record because we went into Afghanistan before we went into Iraq. So another year or two to catch up to the record, 20 years. But anyway, we don't know if this is true, but in the sense that little tidbit that we're getting where the troops are moving out of harm's way, that is good. But we will have to keep an eye on this because even if tomorrow, you know, we don't have a couple hundred thousand troops there.
Yeah.
You know, we have several thousand. And they could move out rather quickly. But regardless, it's what kind of strings are attached. And evidently, our strings are attached to so many countries. We have troops in about 130 countries.
Yeah.
And we have embassies there that are occupied by CIA agents. Can you imagine that? I had a member of my family that actually was involved in it. He was in the State Department, but he verified this thing about, you know, the business part of it. The CIA was there and there was business going on in these embassies. Anyway, we'll encourage them, bring the troops home. We marched in for not a good purpose. We were not under siege. We were not threatened. Our national security wasn't endangered. But we still witnessed the propaganda machine got busy, and they were able to convince the people going from a lackadaisical effort to enthusiasm. Of course, you know, the initial reaction against Iraq came right after 9/11. So that's... This is a little calmer. I hope it's a good decision, and I hope they listen to us and make it thorough.
Yeah. Well, let's put up that first clip because this is what we saw early this morning. We weren't going to lead with this piece, but it's fascinating. This is a reporter for the BBC. Breaking, White House coordinator for the Middle East, Brett McGurk, has informed Iraqi officials that U.S. troops withdraw from Iraq. Step by step, sources tell me, first combat troops and then others. Now, since he put this out about an hour ago, he's reporting that the U.S. is denying this and that the statement itself came from the Iraqi prime minister's office after the meeting with McGurk. They had a different interpretation of what was being said. So we don't know exactly what's happening, but it is interesting, nevertheless, that the Iraqi prime minister's office felt compelled to release this information that, hey, they're leaving, because we know that last year the parliament voted for the U.S. to leave. We know that just a month, you know, a few weeks ago, the prime minister condemned the U.S. attacks on its own military, on Iraq's own military, these so-called militias that are part of the Iraqi military, condemned that U.S. attack on them. and that the U.S. position there is really untenable. The whole idea that we're going to attack them, we're going to bomb them as a deterrent has not worked. It's a failed policy. So when you put all those together, it might just be, it might just be facts on the ground mean more than what the denials of the administration.
Right. There's another news item today, which I don't know if you could call it news, but at least it was brought out, and it's something that deserves very close attention.
Yes.
But it's not inconceivable. That's the part. Even as wild as it is, why are we doing this? But I just described why that we're involved. I mean, from the very first I got involved in foreign policy was when I was in the military in the 1960s, and
yeah.
The Vietnam War was going on, and we were involved with Diem's killing and this sort of thing. But the news today said U.S. military trained Haiti assassins.
Wow.
And of course, we've assassinated a few people, even ourselves. We don't have to train them. But I have. It wouldn't make any sense to me. They have enough problems. But that is not the type of export. They need an export or an exposure to what liberty is all about. And that's the only export that I'm interested in participating in. Anyway, let's go to our regular items because these are just overwhelming. They're not going to listen to us this week. Next week they'll listen to it.
Yeah, for sure.
want to talk a little bit about natural infections, how you protect it. And the big argument has been if you get COVID and they identify it and then you have immunity, why is it that the CDC still wants you to get a shot?
Yeah.
And they claim, better safe than sorry. But there was a study, and I think it was in Israel, and they did it. And they said that you definitely do. And I was telling Daniel a few minutes ago, I said, before all this started and I was refreshing my memory about immunities, if somebody had given me a medical quiz, they say, well, if you have such and such disease 32 years ago, are you protected? And basically the answer is yes. If you've had a disease, there are a few rare exceptions on what happens. But I would say, when you have a disease, you're really protected. And that's what this little clip was all about. And they said, they even use the word may and being careful, but I actually think it may, but it very likely will give you the immunity. And there's not any, the statistics we read here, there's no justification for talking to the drug companies. Guess who's the strongest supporters of this?
Yeah.
Fauci and the drug companies.
Yep.
Oh no, you don't have it. And you can still, even if you don't get sick, you can get it and you can spread it around. These variants are so dangerous.
Yeah.
Millions of people are getting it. It was just in the last couple of days, a week, I guess, maybe, they've been really stirring up the fear-mongering. That means that our side's winning. And when you see the crowds out there, in the various ball games and things like this, I would say the people are voting on this as well. They're not frightened. I'm sure they've been exposed to the variants, but it hasn't intimidated them that everybody, is rushed back to their houses, put on their masks and all this. I think there's a healthy resistance to accepting this nonsense that we're in for a big, big trouble from these variants. There's just no strong evidence that a variant is going to be necessarily a lot more serious and more dangerous than the disease itself.
Well, just as you say, it's always been common knowledge that a prior infection produces natural immunity. It's also always been common knowledge that when a virus mutates and becomes a different variant, it may become more infectious, easier to catch, but much less deadly. And that's how viruses come and die. But it is fascinating what's happening. It's not only in Israel, but Israel and the UK are the two most vaccinated countries of the large countries on Earth. Israel has a huge percentage of its population with vaccines, but they're finding something fascinating. And Alex Berenson, who we talk about a lot, he's been tracking it in both countries. And it really is startling because the surge that's happening in Israel and in the UK is not coming from people that have had prior infections of the COVID-19. It's actually coming largely to a significant degree from breakthrough cases. And Dan Horowitz over at The Blaze has a good piece out. He talks about a new study in Israel Channel 13 in Israel reports preliminary data showing that the resurgence of COVID infections in Israel is being driven almost exclusively by those who never had prior infection, whether they're vaccinated or not. And we know that the percentage of the population that's vaccinated is very, very high. And here's the Israel National News. They talk about, with a total of 835,000 Israelis known to have recovered from the virus, the 72 instances of reinfection amount to 0.0086% of people who are already infected with COVID. By contrast, Israelis who were vaccinated were 6.72 times more likely to get infected after the shot than after natural infection. That is significant.
It wouldn't be too difficult to find the various exposures that we have in ordinary life that's much, much more dangerous, like getting in our car.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably more dangerous. But nevertheless, it's being used. And, you know, when they do this, and sometimes they strike out, and there's a quote I'm going to use later on coming from a foreign source, that they must be really panicked, you know, to say and do things, because we're going to lose our jobs if there's not a crisis out there.
Yeah.
And if there isn't a crisis, they'll create one. And the crisis is really the people who are propagandizing on this. And sometimes it's just for political gain. And sometimes, Daniel, you won't believe it, but sometimes it's just for money.
Money, money, money. Wants the money.
Yeah.
Well, let's look at this second clip, because this, we talk about Israel, but it's also in the UK. This is Alex Berenson's tweet this morning. This is fascinating. This is from the BBC. The HMS Queen Elizabeth, COVID outbreak on Navy flagship. There have been 100 cases on the HMS Queen Elizabeth. And as Berenson says, vaccines work so well that 1/7 of the fully vaccinated crew on the UK's flagship aircraft carrier now has coronavirus. Yes, 1/7, 100 out of 700 sailors on the Queen Elizabeth. So it's fascinating, and it's suggesting, and we're seeing this increasingly, no one's going to want to hear it, but, and we're already talking about a third booster shot. That means that the immunity that's being given by the shots is wearing off. It's not what they said it was, and that's the next thing to happen.
Right, and the other thing that goes through my mind when they say, well, you've had one, and we have to make it safe, so we need to give you two, and you might need three. And what crosses my mind, and we've talked about it so much, and I've had seen this personally, is people having reaction from the vaccine.
Yeah.
So that means that they're much more in danger by getting a repeat vaccination when it's even less so. But they're trying to, these people are presenting the evidence like it's worse than having the COVID originally.
Yeah.
I mean, or at least it's bad, which just isn't true.
Yeah, and it's, the danger of this, the shot losing its true, but as you say, after the second shot is when a lot of people are having these reactions. So, and the idea that you're going to go back and get a third one, there's going to be, talk about vaccine hesitancy. People, hey, you told me that if I had one or two, I'm set for life. Now I got to go back. I already had a big problem after two. I'm not going to do it. I think you're going to see that set in.
I don't have the details on this, and I don't have names or places, but the story was that a wife, had a shot, had the vaccination, and as a consequence, died from it. And the husband refused to take it, and he was in big trouble. They gave him no leeway at all, although his wife died, you know, from having received the vaccination, and he was not going to have it. And I don't know whether he was going to lose his job or what, but that's how obsessed they are with this and how far removed they are at people being allowed to make their own personal choices about their own life and their own body and taking care of their own medical care. But every day, though, I see somebody on ordinary television coming on and talking about the violation of rights,
yeah,
which is, of course, what we will be talking about at our conference, the civil liberties involved.
Yeah.
And that involves all kinds of circumstances, but certainly the violations of a massive number of people during this last year and a half has been a violation of civil liberties.
And the result of that has been what our next story is, and this is unbelievable. Let's put up that next clip. This is what happens when you violate people's civil liberties. Tens of thousands more people died from drug overdose in 2020 than ever before. Now, this is the Daily Wire, and they're reporting on a Wall Street Journal investigation, Dr. Paul. And do the next clip because this is the quote from the Wall Street Journal. It's amazing. The surge, the 2020 data show, was driven largely by a proliferation of fentanyl, a powerful synthetic opioid. The pandemic amplified the epidemic of overdoses, bringing on social isolation, trauma, and job losses, according to addiction experts and treatment providers. Dr. Paul, from 72,000 and some change overdoses in 2019, you shot up, skyrocketed 13% to 93,331 overdoses in 2020. It's amazing.
You know, you'd think that would alarm people or alert them to what's going on. But I think we've talked about this for a long time from the very beginning. And you didn't have to go very far to find somebody that describes the trauma within a family, especially with the kids.
Yes.
You know, and this is what these overdoses are. They're not babies, but they're young people, and
yeah,
a lot of the time it's related to their activities at school and different things like this. It's very very stressful, and there's a lot of people who suffer from that. Unfortunately, they're moving away from it, and hopefully they will be able to get back to a more normal normal routine when they go back to school. But there are still some that aren't ready for that. There are still some of the unions that say, oh no, we don't agree with this. And then, well, who's in charge? Is the president in charge? Is the governor in charge?
Yeah.
Is it the school board in charge? How about the parents? What do they have to say about it? You
yeah
know, oh yes, but we parents don't know anything about taking care of kids. We have to make it we have to make it safe for the kids and make sure they get here. Especially we want them to come here on our terms because we have to, they don't say this word, we have to indoctrinate
yeah
them.
Exactly, yeah. So. You made a great point just now because you talked about, and I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I'm assuming that drug overdoses are predominantly among younger people, especially with the fentanyl. And as we know, younger people are not as susceptible, certainly below age 20 to 30, are not susceptible to dying to COVID, thankfully. We know that from the statistics now. So I think it actually could be true, what we've said, what you've said all along, is that for people of this age range, considering this increase in overdoses, the shutdowns, the lockdowns have been more deadly to this group than the virus itself.
And you know, the drug thing is an issue in itself, and I've had a strong position on that a long time ago, because the war on drugs is more deadly than the drugs. As
yes
bad as the drugs are, I mean, that isn't what's doing it. It's making it illegal. And if you want to look at another problem that we have, everybody knows about the problem, but nobody hardly ever mentions that it's really part of this drug issue, and that's our border security, where the real motivation is, you know, to make a lot of money at the border. It is now bootlegging people in,
yeah,
but it is also the drugs help pay for that too. Some of them will go out and get involved just because they want to have the money and get somebody to bribe them, get them into the country.
Yeah.
So the drugs are a big issue. So it's a real tragedy.
Yeah. Well, we want to move on to a couple of smaller things, and this is one, I mean, I think this is filed under the, you want to go with France. Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, I forgot about
France.
Yeah, we should do France.
Because we talked about that
yesterday.
We talked
about a little bit yesterday. Yeah.
So
The fact that the when Macron said, hey, we're going to institute medical apartheid. If you don't have that shot in your arm, you're not going to get to do anything. No cafes, no food, no baguettes, no nothing, no berets, anything. But the French people, they didn't like that very much. And yesterday, as you know, was Bastille Day, and they get a little riled up on Bastille Day. They did it a couple hundred years ago, too. We can watch a little clip about what people in France thought about Macron's idea that you are under apartheid if you don't have a shot in your arm. If we can play just a little bit of this clip with the sound. Thousands and thousands of French, and they were chanting liberté, liberté, liberté.
You know, and in a way, yesterday, I think I was a little bit cynical and probably didn't have a whole lot of, not negative, but not a whole lot of positive thing. You know, those French, why don't they do something about violence?
Do something.
So I can't say that today because they've done something. You know, they stood up. And no, that is good news. And once again, when you see that number of people, you would have to think the politicians would wake up a little bit. You know, you think demonstrations like that and a lot of people, that's only good because they have a bit of democracy left. I don't think it has anything to do with what they consider is democracy, you know, going and voting, and then you don't trust the elections anyway.
Yeah.
It is an expression of the people, and that's really the way dictatorships come down. You know, there's some demonstrations in Cuba right now, and hopefully that's all positive. Get rid of those dictators down there.
Yeah,
but I think that's great, and when we see it in France, I think we should certainly congratulate them for responding to it, just so it remains peaceful.
Well, we do know, but because the CIA is involved in the Cuba stuff, we're seeing a lot of that on the MSM, but we're not seeing much about the France protests on the mainstream media. And the one thing we're definitely not seeing is, we saw this demonstration here, we're not seeing the people getting beaten up and tear gassed by the police, which I've seen plenty of videos on Twitter about that too. So we're not getting that full story at all.
Yeah, this whole thing though on the French, they are going to solve the problem with a health pass.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, constant testing, you can't do this. And you have to be tested all during the process wherever you are. And they said, it's not like here, we give them all this stuff for free.
Yeah.
You know, the test is free and the vaccines are free, which is a lot of nonsense. There's nothing free, really.
Yeah, no free lunch.
But on some of the things French say, they're going to have that test. It's this thing, and we mentioned this yesterday, is people's attitude is, yes, we can't quite do it because we have to be careful. Our government shouldn't be doing this to it. We'll have to get the corporations to do it, and they can do the dirty work, and we'll be partners with a corporation.
Yeah.
You know, we made that point. But, you know, they say that we can't do this, but the corporations, you know, shouldn't be doing it either.
Yeah.
That's the whole problem. And I think it's a really sad story that all we hear is all this nonsense going on, and the people are in a dilemma over this, less so now than they were 6 months ago. At the beginning, I think it was more confusion, and then there was more, we're patriots, we have to protect we have to protect our country and safety. There's a war on coming. The virus has already invaded the country. But today, I think there's a much healthier attitude, and we'd like to encourage that attitude.
Yes, at least here in Texas, I think. Well, should we move on? Yesterday, we featured a very unhinged prime minister of New Zealand who said, only listen to us, we're the source of truth. Now I think we'll look at a very unhinged former Health and Human Services Secretary, Kathleen Sebelius. She served under President Obama, and she was on CNN yesterday, and she was interviewed about the vaccine. And let's put up this clip and see what she said. If this is not, it almost sounds like desperation, Dr. Paul. Sebelius said unvaccinated Americans should not be allowed to work or have access to children. And here's the thing, these people, they act like they're so well-informed, but they're actually not well-informed at all. She said, we're in a situation where we have a wildly effective vaccine, multiple choices, lots available, free of charge, and we have folks who are saying, I just won't do it. Well, it's time to say to those folks, it's fine if you don't choose to get vaccinated. You may not come to work. You may not have access to a situation where you're going to put my grandchildren in jeopardy, which of course they wouldn't be anyway, where you might kill them, or you might put them in a situation where they're going to carry the virus to someone else. Lies, 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 the whole thing. But it's dangerous because this is pretty serious stuff.
Well, now, what I get upset about is this punishment argument.
Yeah.
You have to submit, you have to obey, do what we tell you, or you will be punished. And then they work it out where the government dances around it, and our government's, you know, doing it all the time. The government said, you know, this administration, but it seems they always do that. They say, oh, no, we're not going to do it. We're going to leave it up to somebody else to do it. And, you know, there was a saying that... you know, the most dangerous person to a government is a person who thinks for themselves.
Yeah.
And that That, of course, is the danger. So if you have one or two of these people, you know, people are upset and they're annoyed and they go to the meetings and they don't have any plans to demonstrate or anything like that. They just go for the information and see what's going on. But then there's going to be one person stand up.
Yeah.
Boy, that, I tell you, is. But the individual that finally stands up sometimes is just saying, hey, that's what I think.
Yeah.
You know, the rest, they go in, and before you know, the whole crowd is with them. Well, see, the government can't stand the person like that because they want to they want to be holier than thou, that they know what truth is, and they want to be the truth tellers. And that's what this is all about. Who are the truth tellers? And it's always this stuff. Just think of this malarkey that goes on elections. Yeah. Who's telling the truth?
Yeah.
And I think that it's a major problem on figuring out who you can trust. And this, in the governments, this is one of the strong arguments for monarchy. Mini government. Just have a small government. Maybe we can keep track of them.
Yeah.
But when the government is so big, when you think of how big our government is, that one individual has no way. See, I think Trump made an effort to control and change things for the better. But he couldn't even control the FBI.
Or his own, yeah, his
own
staff.
They were on the other side. Yeah, they were on the side of the enemy. So that's where some of the problem is. Size of government.
Yeah, size of government. Well, the one thing you told me when we were talking about Sebelius before the show is that she actually revealed how the rest of them really think. She blurted out what the rest of these authoritarians really think. She showed the iron fist inside the velvet glove.
She was like telling the truth.
Yeah,
was telling the truth about her feelings.
Yeah.
She didn't tell the truth about how evil it was. Most of the people will hide it. That might be a negative in the sense that they're so open now. I can say, well, I'm going to burn down the Capitol building nobody's going to say boo, that the people will just tolerate whatever they tell them.
Well, do we... I guess we're about out of things now for today.
I think we are.
So well, I would just close, and this is my Friday. It's your Thursday, unfortunately, as we work harder on the show than I do. But I just want to thank everyone for watching the show. Of course, please subscribe to the channel. Please go to ronpaulinstitute.org and subscribe to updates. If you're interested in our Washington conference, Dr. Paul, the update for that is that we've sold about 3/4 of the available tickets. So they're running short. So don't be caught without one if you're interested in going. It's going to be a great lineup. It's going to be a good get-together. And we look forward to seeing all of you there.
Good. And I think that we're going to have a full house, and that will be welcome. And I think everybody else is going to have a good time at it because we'll be among friends and people. But we'll also have challenges. We have a lot of speakers that are coming that I'm anxious to visit with. I haven't seen some of them in years. And this, of course, is very encouraging. But I do want to make sure that our viewers realize how grateful we are to you, because we can't have a program if nobody comes to listen and support us in any way you can. Because sometimes it's just a matter of getting some people to sign on to our channel. That can be really helpful. And we appreciate that, and support for our programs can be very, very helpful. But once again, I want to thank you for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.